living with obesity, it's a character flaw or it's a failure on their part. People think that being on this weight loss medication is going to be a quick fix. In the times that we live in, there's so much noise on social media. Well, first and foremost, this medication is not for those people.
Hi, my name's Hunter. I'm here with Nishita, part of our pharmaceuticals team. We're here with another episode of the Another Angle podcast. We're going to be covering all things weight loss medications and what the Right Angle team can do for you. Well, thank you very much for coming in today. I know it's been a long walk from your desk about 10 metres away, but thank you for coming into the studio.
That's okay.
Just to kind of kick things off, I guess if you can give us a little bit of an introduction, you know, what your background is, how you came to be part of the Right Angle team.
Yeah, sure. So I just started about 4 weeks ago. I'm the clinical prescribing pharmacist and I used to work in an NHS hospital. I trained there and I'd been there for 4 years. And I think I just kind of wanted to change, transition over to remote prescribing. And yeah, this company just caught my eye, so thought I'd apply.
Amazing. So how have you found that transition? Obviously, the NHS is the largest body in the country in healthcare. So I think maybe scaling back to our online pharmacy, which obviously isn't as large, you know, how have you found that transitional period?
Well, it's been very different. Obviously, in an NHS hospital, you see patients face-to-face and our pharmacy is completely online. So we get to speak to patients, but mainly through telephone consultations and video calls. So I think that's been the biggest thing to have to adapt to. Okay. But it's really interesting and I love a challenge, so it's great.
Cool. Obviously, coming into Right Angle, we've got a bit more of a niche where there is a focus on kind of the weight loss and wellness sector of healthcare. Mm. I think it's a very trendy topic at the moment with all of these weight loss treatments. You know, people are umming and ahhing about them. Mm. From a clinical perspective, can you actually just describe what they are and how they, I guess, work with your body?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of our weight loss injectables, they mainly work by affecting your appetite, boosting your metabolism and regulating insulin secretion. So to give you a better understanding of that, we've got our GLP-1 agonists, known as one of the medications that we have is Wegovy. And Wegovy works by working on the hypothalamus, which is your hunger center within your brain. And so it works to suppress your appetite. It also works on regulating insulin secretion after you've had a meal to help regulate blood glucose levels. And also it slows down gastric emptying, which helps make you feel fuller for longer. So that's how our GLP-1 agonists work. But we also have Mounjaro, which not only has all the benefits of the GLP-1 agonist, but also activates GIP. And that affects metabolism, boosts metabolism by increasing energy expenditure. So essentially that's how these weight loss injectables work.
Amazing. That was a really good breakdown, to be fair. I mean, it's probably good for me to know that as well, considering I'm in the marketing team. I'll get the odd question. So yeah. I'll note that down for a little bit later on. When it comes to, obviously, you've got a deep understanding of these medications as required as a prescribing pharmacist. I think just to get a better understanding of what the general consensus is in the public sphere, what are some of the most common misconceptions that you have seen, I guess, trending on social media or, you know, just online through, you know, some of the more average news bulletins that are trying to get out some of that information? Like, is there a disparity between the information that's being provided through those channels versus what's actually true from a clinical perspective?
I think one of the biggest things that I found in my own practice over the last month is probably people think that being on this weight loss medication is going to be a quick fix and that you can be on the medication and you'll just lose weight like almost by magic and without kind of incorporating those behavioral changes, those lifestyle modifications. So I think that's the biggest thing. Of course, stick to the regimen, take the medication, but patients need to make sure that they make changes to their daily routine as well by maximizing exercise, following a balanced diet, and really just you know, making those changes to their lifestyle alongside taking the medication. And it's not just a miracle working drug. It needs to, you know, work alongside all the efforts that you're putting into your daily living as well.
Of course. So when it comes to obviously people hopping on this medication, let's say that they have gone through the process of getting their consultation completed, mm-hmm. they've worked with the team, they're able to start off. What kind of recommendations would you make when they're initially in that phase of learning how their body is going to be cooperating with the medication? You know, are you driving towards that immediate lifestyle change, or would you say it's kind of that incremental alteration, I guess, with like a little bit of extra exercise and then, you know, slightly reducing your calorie intake, or are you saying go hard and fast kind of thing?
So I just think it's really important to assess how you're getting along in the first month, and maybe keep a diary and see how you respond to certain foods. But it really is just about making small changes. And I think that's the best way to make sure that you're able to maintain it long term. So maybe having smaller meals, more frequent meals, listening to your body, you know, starting by 10,000 steps a day, and then maybe, you know, incorporating some more endurance training, HIIT workouts, and whatever works for you. But it really is different patient to patient. So I think the first month is really just important. Listen to your body and see how it responds to the medication. You can go from there.
Definitely. So when it comes to your prescriptions and obviously having floods of people walking through the door, do you have a so-called ideal candidate that you're looking for in order to prescribe the medication?
Well, I can kind of run through the eligibility criteria that we have. So, for example, you've got your BMI, and the medication is available to anyone that has a BMI over 30. That's the first thing that we look at, but also those that have a BMI of 27 and above, but also have a weight-related health condition. So anything like polycystic ovarian syndrome falls within that criteria, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Those are just a few of the examples. But we start off with the BMI and then go from there. And we really, you know, try and conduct an extensive health assessment to see if they have any things that stop them from getting the medication, or they have certain conditions that will, you know, be better suited to the medication as well.
Okay, so I think you briefly touched on the eligibility side of things as well. What kind of people are just outright not able to get access to this medication?
Well, anyone with a healthy BMI. So I think that's really important to, you know, touch on, because I think around all the social media craze around these medications, we do have certain patients that have a very healthy BMI and they want to lose a few pounds. So first and foremost, this medication is not for those people. So it's for people that suffer with being overweight, they have obesity, and it's really for those patients. So that's the first thing. And also, like I said, after we conduct that extensive health assessment, we go through any of the regular medication the patients have, and we also run through their medical conditions. So some patients are not eligible for treatment if they, for example, have a history of thyroid cancer. So we look into that. Also, if patients have severe gastrointestinal disorders, such as gastroparesis is one of the exclusion criterias. We also don't prescribe for patients that have a BMI over 55 also. So we've got a top end of the BMI.
I didn't actually know. So what's the reasoning? Because obviously I know that we're 30 and above. I don't think I've seen a 55, but so what's the, like, the clinical logic behind that?
The clinical logic is if their BMI is above 55, we'd rather they get a full health assessment by a clinician who's a specialist. So really just refer them back to a lot of the weight management clinicians, consultants that will be able to have a better understanding of their condition. So it's probably just not better suited for our online pharmacy platform to prescribe for those patients, because they're just a little bit more complicated. And we don't want to miss out on something that's really important that affects their health just because we don't have that face-to-face or regular reviews with them.
Okay, so you've touched on the condition side of things. Are there any medications that might halt people from being able to get the consultation over the line?
Yeah. So mainly we have medications that affect their blood glucose levels, because Mounjaro does work by lowering your blood glucose levels. I think it's important to remember that essentially these weight loss drugs were licensed for type 2 diabetes to begin with. And now they've transitioned into, you know, the weight loss side of things. Mm. So they do lower blood glucose. So if you're on any other medications, such as some anti-diabetics like sulfonylureas, you're not really eligible to take Mounjaro alongside it, at least from us, and that's our prescribing policy.
Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact, having seen you guys work away, that it's pretty rigorous, the checking system, I guess, and ensuring that, you know, the right medication is going to the right people. Obviously, we've touched on some of the side effects that come with the medication, but there are obviously a, you know, plentiful amount of benefits as well.
Yeah.
Do you see... obviously, people are making their concerns heard. How do people balance kind of those side effects with the benefits as well? Is it something that they just need to push through, or are there proper mechanisms in order for them to kind of overcome some of those hurdles?
Well, most of the side effects with these weight loss injectables are related to how it works. So like I mentioned, it slows gastric emptying, but that also, although it has those weight loss benefits and it helps to make the patient feel more full, it also can cause bloating and constipation and a bit of nausea. Okay. So I think to begin with, it's really important that people titrate up the doses quite slowly. And I feel like a lot of people just want to get to the top, the highest dose.
Just because it's going to move the fastest.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's definitely a common misconception. It's better to start from the lowest dose, up titrate as tolerated, and that will be one of the biggest things that they'll notice in terms of managing their side effects. But also there's things like if they're experiencing constipation, they can focus on a more fiber-rich diet. So there's small changes that you can make to the diet that will help with constipation. With nausea, they might find that it's better to have smaller but more frequent meals. Mm-hmm. So that's a way to combat nausea, take the medication with food. So there's a few ways. And of course, these ways don't work for every patient. Mm. There's no blueprint in managing these side effects, but these are just some of the ways that they can, you know, combat the side effects and better tolerate the side effects. But that being said, usually the side effects will kind of settle with time once your body starts getting used to the hormone regulation and the way it's all working. So it is, there is that concept of you got to give it a little bit of time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so it sounds like it's really just that adjustment period that people need to understand that there will be different side effects for everyone, right? Like some people might be adverse and they'll have a handful of them, other people will have none.
Of course. Yeah.
But it sounds like kind of that driving factor in order to get over that hurdle previously mentioned is that it sounds like it's centered around food and what their intake kind of looks like. Would you say that that's kind of the pivotal factor that people need to be focusing on? Like obviously changing the way that your body moves and, like, you know, becoming more active, making sure that you're getting your steps in, you know, going to the gym. But do you think it kind of leads with food first?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, this is for most of the common side effects. There are uncommon side effects that cannot be managed with, you know, behavioral changes.
Yeah.
But I think the majority of the side effects when it comes to the GI side effects definitely focus on food. And I think that's kind of a good thing about this medication, that you can start on it and you can start building those food habits. Mm-hmm. And hopefully once you get to the maintenance dose, you could even consider long-term tapering down. And hopefully by that point, you've already kind of implemented these small, small changes, small, small food habits into your daily life. And that means when you eventually decide you want to come off the medication, you've kind of stuck in with those food habits. So that is the idea.
Yeah, so I guess it sounds like those lifestyle changes are important to implement over time, just so you become a bit more habitual where it comes to your eating routines and obviously your exercise. Yeah, so obviously just avoiding that relapse and that kind of bounce back period where people might have felt that dependency on the medication. Maybe if they have taken it only for a couple months, and then I feel like that might trigger some of that that bounce back, I guess, with how they eat previously. You know, if that's a known habit that you've had, you know, let's say if it's March now, it's slightly earlier in the year, you know, it's not really that long ago, but if you were to rewind it a year, you've probably had enough time in between to ensure that your life has actually changed for the better, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Everything takes time. Change doesn't happen overnight. So, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Okay. Leaning further into the, I guess, the community side of things, we've touched on a lot of the clinical insights that there are with a lot of these weight loss treatments.
Yeah.
I think it's no secret that there's been a lot of rising popularity with some of these medications. And obviously, you know, social media is a massive factor in that. I think the question is more or less about how do people go about doing their due diligence? Like, do you think it's a good balance between, you know, patient reviews just online, or do you think they're best obviously going to their medical professionals that are at hand to them, or even obviously light promotion, but talking to the right angle team as well? But yeah, how do you think people should navigate, I guess, that whirlpool of just information?
It is really difficult in the times that we live in. There's so much noise on social media, and it is really difficult to kind of make a decision on what are you going to believe. But I would always recommend any patient that wants to start on the medication to do their own research, make an informed decision. There's a lot online, but there's also really good websites online. The NHS website, they can, you know, research the side effects, you know, the eligibility, whether they feel like this medication is for them, if they can try anything before starting the medication. All that information is available on trusted websites. So I think it's just really important that patients make their own decisions.
Definitely.
And just keep well informed. Also, when you do, you know, get the medication prescribed to you, it always comes with a patient information leaflet, just to reiterate everything that that I just said in terms of the side effects and all of that as well, and what to do if you miss a dose or anything like that will be provided in the patient information leaflet. So always have a read of those.
Yeah.
They're, you know, usually folded up into a little...
It feels like a throwaway normally, but I guess you do have to read them sometimes.
Exactly. And sometimes people don't even notice that it's there. So I think it's just important to make patients aware that it is there, and that's, you know, all evidence-based information. So that's your, you know, best way of informing yourself.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's a major commitment as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you don't go 50-50 into starting your treatment. Mm-hmm. So I guess just ensuring that you're getting information from like trusted people that you also trust as well. I mean, I understand the patient review side of things as well. Obviously, dealing with the marketing side of things, we see a lot of output just from the community and them voicing either concerns or any of the side effects or any of the benefits. So I think being able to have multiple references, where it be the patient's and from the clinical experts, I think that all really comes together and helps you to make the decision whether it's right for you.
Yeah, right? Because patient stories are really important as well, but every patient's different, every journey's different.
Exactly.
So I think it's just kind of important to remember that as well, that if someone had a really bad time with it or someone had a really good time with it, doesn't mean that you're going to have the exact same journey as them.
Yeah, it's all unique, right?
Yeah.
We've touched on a lot of the physical health side of things. I mean, there's reasonable documentation that there are some mental health factors that are included with a lot of these weight loss medications. So let's say a patient does come forward to you with like emotional, like psychological issues, either before or during their treatment process. How do you go about, I guess, just reaffirming them that this is all kind of part of the process, or is there a time where it might be more beneficial for them to come off, you know, like how do you navigate that?
So I think whenever we have reviews, for example, I think whenever discussing how the patient's doing and like how the weight loss is affecting their mental health, how they feel every day, I always try and like steer the conversation to how weight loss is benefiting their physical health, and not only just, you know, making them feel like they look better, they look slimmer. So kind of steering away from the body image side of things and kind of focusing on the fact that losing weight is also helping with your energy levels. It's, you know, because you feel like you have more energy, you're able to get up and get that fresh air, and, you know, you're more mobile. And how does that make you feel? And, you know, is that what's making you feel better? I think I always try and steer the conversation towards that, because I think there's so much out there with body image, and that is the main focus for a lot of patients. And I kind of just personally feel like I want them to see the other side of things and how it's affecting their actual physical health as well. So I do try and steer conversations in that way. But obviously mental health is a very sensitive subject. Mm. It's difficult from patient to patient, but I personally just try and have an open conversation with them and kind of ask questions to, you know, make sure that they're able to, like, there is someone there to speak to. And yeah, I think that's the main thing. And like I said, it's very different from patient to patient. So, definitely. Yeah.
So what, just being able to act like a sounding board a little bit, obviously from the clinical side of the fence. Yeah. I think that's obviously the best that you can do.
Exactly. Or like signposting them to someone who's more suited to assess their mental health as well. That's always important, you know, working within your own limitations and making sure that when they do need to see someone, a specialist, we're able to pick up on that and refer patients.
Definitely. I mean, it's good that you can acknowledge that as well, right? Yeah, like there are obviously some people out there that do need that extra assistance. Yeah. So that's great that obviously we've got that on hand and that's an option.
Exactly.
Cool. When it comes to obviously your role as a pharmacist, how do you feel that your position impacts the long-term success of your patients? You know, what kind of continued support is there in place? You know, how do the catch-ups and reviews look with some of the patients?
Well, as a pharmacist, I think it's like we're really a crucial part of the initiation process because we conduct the health assessments with the patients. Like I was talking about, their eligibility criteria, the exclusion criteria, trying to get as much information out of the patient as possible to make that decision, make that clinical decision. So we're quite vital in the initial part of things. But also every 6 months we check in, see how they're getting along, conduct another assessment, see if there's been any changes to their health. And also just during that time, whenever we get any questions via customer services from patients, we're available to be able to answer them. So even being able to advise on, you know, alternating between injection sites, and maybe a patient's kind of injecting in the same site over and over again and it's causing soreness and maybe a rash, and you know, even just being able to provide that little bit of advice to be like, you can alternate between your abdomen and thigh and maybe to another side. So we're always there to answer queries like that as well. If they're started on a new medication, we can do an interaction check, make sure the injectable is still suitable for them. And yeah, just trying to be there along the way to make sure that they're on the right doses, make sure they're being up titrated as they should. And especially when it gets to the stage where they're happy with their weight and they want to go to maintenance dose. Mm. So just being there throughout their journey and being able to advise on what dose is best for them, the most safe and effective way of, you know, them taking the medication. That's what we're like essentially there for.
Cool. So. Well, it sounds pretty comprehensive, to be fair. And I know that obviously customer service is on hand as well. With any of those queries, they'll pass them on to you when it comes to anything a bit more clinical and some of those patients that might have those concerns a bit, you know, shorter down that track. I think it's brilliant that, you know, we're able to have those people on hand and people can rely on our services that they're able to get chatting to a real person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. When it comes to accessibility of the treatments, I don't think it's much of a secret that there is a cost to these things. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's some limitations to people being able to receive the medications? And do you see any future where accessibility can be grown beyond the current pool of people that are simply put able to afford it?
Absolutely. Well, I think already in the last few months we've seen accessibility grow hugely, and I think more and more online pharmacies are providing it, more and more GP surgeries. It's now going to be on the NHS, available on the NHS, and I think that will be the perfect scenario of being able to, you know, increase accessibility, especially for those patients who can't afford it. Mm. So I think the NHS is backing it. And I think that's a huge, you know, positive about this. Like, if the NHS is backing it, that means a lot of people are going to start, you know, being able to provide it as well from different sectors, like private sector, public sector, GP surgeries, community pharmacies. I can see it steering in that way as well.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, it obviously makes it a viable option as well, right? Like if the NHS is confirming it as something that is attributed to helping with weight loss alongside, obviously, a lot of those other conditions, it means that, you know, people will be getting the right medication when they actually need it. You know, there's not going to be that level of hesitation when it's, you know, with some of the online pharmacies that might take a little bit longer for people to kind of get over that barrier. But if you've got that large, you know, governing body, it makes sense, right? So I think it benefits everyone, to be fair.
100%. Like, these medications have actually been on the market for about 20 years, but they were licensed for type 2 diabetes only. Right. So the NHS saying that they are now licensed for weight loss is a huge benefit. It's a huge, like, yes, go ahead. So,
massive step.
Yeah. Kind of reinforces that it's safe to use in, obviously, the right patients.
Just for people that are wanting to start their weight loss journey, I guess we've touched on a large array of topics when it comes to these treatments. I guess what would be just your best advice for anyone that's looking to start their journey?
Well, actually, I've found that a lot of patients are kind of hesitant to start or seek help. Like, they almost feel like you know, living with obesity, it's a character flaw, or it's something that, you know, is kind of like a failure on their part. Whereas I feel like obesity and living with obesity should be looked at as any other chronic condition. People wouldn't, you know, be afraid to seek help when it comes to diabetes or high blood pressure. So I just feel like this stigma around seeking help for obesity just should be removed. It should be treated as any other chronic condition. And if you're living with it, you should absolutely try and, you know, explore the medical treatments that you have available to you. So I think that's one of the biggest things that even as a society we need to overcome, and patients, I think, will slowly get used to it with the growing, you know, popularity of these medications.
Definitely.
So being able to put their hand up and say, yes, I need help, I want to seek help, I want to be on medication for this, I want to combat it, I think that's one of the most important things.
I was going to say, because I think it's that, to me, it seems that the acknowledgement factor is the one that's really stopping that gap being bridged. It's just a lot of people probably are sitting there in the correct categories thinking that they need a solution, but they're not. I guess there's a bit of taboo surrounding the topic as well. You know, I think from previous years, I know myself included, having heard about, you know, Ozempic, especially in the United States, you know, I think that's a very different narrative to what is being written now, where it is far more accessible. It is actually a viable option. So I think people are slowly starting to grow into that, which is nice to see as well, right?
Absolutely.
Obviously, with the rising popularity of these medications, you know, there's a lot of people gaining access and obviously doing the consultations, passing those consultations. Are there any potential dangers that come with actually taking some of these medications, you know, with people misusing the product or, you know, potentially not understanding the correct sites to inject? You know, I'm sure there's a whole flurry of examples I could rattle off, but is there any concerns?
So at the end of the day, it is a medication. Yeah. I've touched on the side effects in terms of the GI side effects, but they are quite severe, uncommon side effects as well. So it's just, and that's the case with any medication out there on the market, but it's important to know that this medication is for the people that need it, and the people that need it, there's always a best benefit risk analysis that takes place, and for the patients that need it, those patients that fit into the eligibility criteria, 100% the benefit outweighs the risks of those uncommon side effects, such as pancreatitis, and like I touched on, the thyroid cancer as well. But when you have patients who don't necessarily need it, or they want to take it to lose a couple of pounds, but they're actually at quite a healthy weight, it's not the best way to go about things. And I think, again, it's not the best for patients to start on the medication without having tried to make those lifestyle changes. So it's really important to kind of pinpoint those patients, and we don't want them to get lost. And we want to be able to say to those patients, this medication is probably not the best course of action for you right now. Try altering your diet, try, you know, exercising a bit more. And so I think essentially what I mean is that patients just need to be very transparent about their full medical history and report any medication that they're taking, any medical conditions that they've had, they currently have, or even have had in the past. And that will just make sure, that will just help us make sure that this medication is a good fit for them.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Thank you very much for coming in today. I know it was a very long journey for you. I'll leave you to get back to work and helping out all those patients. This has been Nishita from our pharmaceutical team. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Another Angle podcast. We're streaming across all channels on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Music.